Let me share with you an amazing secret. The Bible has never been about salvation. Never. From Genesis to Revelation, you cannot find, you will not find, a system of salvation. Shocking? Surprising? But you will find, over and over and over again, repeated in ways that come at us from all sides of the mind, a system of transformation. The Bible is about you and me becoming transformed. It is about us transcending our normalcy, our present human condition. It's about a rising up, a resurrection, a recreation of ourselves. The Bible is about a new way of understanding who we are, what we are, and discovering a new relationship with our Creator. And when I say the Bible, nowhere is this more true than in the Gospels, in the message of, in the story of Jesus Christ. The Lord's Prayer is the Jesus Christ system reduced to the fewest possible words. And it's very important to remember that Jesus never spoke except that he spoke in parable form or metaphor. And in the first two lessons, I brought to our attention one more time that he was giving us symbols that the mind could understand, helping us to rediscover our own higher nature and, of course, our relationship with our Creator. Tonight we're going to take up the continued upward movement of the Lord's Prayer, which is, again, the Jesus Christ system reduced to its essence. And the phrases that we will study are, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And "Give us this day our daily bread." Before I get into the Lord's Prayer, though, I want to go back about 700 years and quote to you a statement that was made by a phenomenal person, Meister Eckhart. He was a theologian, a mystic. He was the founder of German mysticism. He was a person that was apparently speaking from a wisdom that transcended his or our purely human condition. Listen to what he had to say. "As soon as a man or a person turneth himself in spirit, and with his whole heart and mind entereth into the mind of God which is above time, all that ever he hath lost is restored to him." That's an incredible statement. As soon as a person turns himself around, like the prodigal son who came to himself and returned to a dimension of wisdom and love that was greater than his own, and with his whole heart and mind, with all of his feeling and thinking, entereth into the mind of God, which is above time, all that ever he hath lost is restored to him. Meister Eckhart is saying to us that not only is it possible, but he's implying that it is inevitable that we enter into the mind of God. Enter into the mind of God? Well, we already are in the mind of God, but we enter into the experience of the mind of God. And the experience of entering into the mind of God is quite probably what Jesus was talking about when he said, entering into the kingdom of God or the kingdom of the heavens. And if a man were to do this 1,000 times a day, each time a fresh and real union would take place. For he who hath attained thereto asketh nothing further, for he hath found the kingdom of heaven and eternal life on earth. And he would ask for nothing further for the simple reason that everything that we could possibly need or ask for or desire to experience comes as a result of that phenomenal experience that is possible to all persons. And that experience is not so much the result of salvation as it is of transformation, of turning oneself around. And all that ever he hath lost is restored to him. Isn't that incredible? It's the truth. It's the way it is. The word man implies manifestation or being an expression of God. And if we are expressions of God, then each person has before himself or herself a limitless destiny. Limitless. Think about that for a moment. Not limited, but limitless. If this be true, then our work is to express in concrete, definite form the abstract ideas with which God has supplied us. In other words, it's our responsibility here as living beings on this planet to establish our conscious control over the powers that are in us so that we can fully demonstrate in visible form all the possibilities that are expressed. See, if there must be a hidden potential in us. Otherwise, why the urge to grow, to change, to have, to become? What other living creature on this planet has that desire that you have in them that brought you here this evening or that's causing you to listen to this cassette tape? There's something in you that is restless and that is reaching and that understands and knows that there is more, that you haven't even touched the hem of the garment of higher possibilities. Those higher possibilities exist, and so therefore our responsibility is to get on with this assignment, this personal assignment of making our more dramatic demonstration. Let me quote the statement of being that we use on other occasions here. God is all, both invisible and visible. One presence, one mind, one power is all. This one that is all is perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. I am an individualized expression of God. I am ever one with this perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. Another remarkable statement. God individualizes God's self in an infinite number of distinct focal points of consciousness. And you are one of those focal points of consciousness, and I am one of those focal points of consciousness. And the word individualized means not that we're separated from God, from the creative force, the energy that has caused all things to exist. But it means that we cannot be separated from. Individualized means incapable of being divided or separated. It really means that as living expressions of the creative energy, then all that it is, we are, potentially. And our responsibility is to begin to call it forth or to cause it to happen, to let it take more magnificent shapes and forms. Nothing less than the movement in that direction can satisfy us. And if there is in your heart or mine any heaviness or despair, it's simply because we have ceased to move or to express. We have, for a period of time, settled down into a state of complacency, or we have discovered a false god. We've tried to find our strength or our power in some person, situation, or condition. And temporarily, we may be able to convince ourselves that that's possible, but it will not last for very long. With our present three-dimensional consciousness, we cannot see or understand how that which is all can express itself as an individual, how it can divide itself and not be divided. But intuitively, we can understand it. And for a moment, equate kingdom with the word mind or with state of mind. And so when we're talking about your kingdom come, we're talking about your mind begin to function in me. Your state of mind, let it become my experience. Let your thoughts be my thoughts. Your feelings be my feelings. Let your wisdom become my own, expressing through me in such a way that I do not lose my identity, but I gain it. And you and I will be as one. Could this be what Jesus meant when he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, and yet the Father is greater than I, but these things that I do not do them. But they're done through me, but they can also be done through you. Let your joy be my joy. I'm sure most of us will agree that in our ordinary or normal state, we do not live in the kingdom of God or the kingdom of the heavens. We live in the kingdom of make-believe, or the kingdom of our own will be done, or the kingdom of, gosh, I'm enjoying my suffering. Isn't it wonderful? Or the kingdom of my own opinions about how things should be. And God, I really don't need very much help except that I know what will make me happy, and with all the earnestness at my command, I want you to do what I want you to do so that I will be happy. Not your will, but mine. Not your way, but mine. Not your thoughts, but mine. This is sometimes called the kingdom of goofiness or the kingdom of self-will run riot. It's the kingdom of Jack Boland for me and Will Hardy for him and you for you. Well, it certainly is not the state of mind in which there is much evidence of divine love or divine order or divine intelligence. And God is surely not much in charge of things in our ordinary state of mind. But it has been stated again and again that there is in each of us an extraordinary state of beingness that has been called the kingdom of the heavens, the kingdom of God. It's been called Christ consciousness, cosmic consciousness. The Eastern religions have other names for it. It's called the fourth dimension. And by the fourth dimension, I mean more than just the fourth dimension of the three dimensions of measurement of length, width, and depth, plus that of time. We're talking about a fourth dimension, which is a transcendental mental reality that exists and is available to every person. It is that place from which Jesus walked and talked and loved and healed and spoke. It's where the power is. It's where the wisdom is. It's where the love is. And now the incredible thing about that state of beingness is that it embraces and encompasses the three dimensions of space as well as the dimension of time, but in the most amazing way, while it encompasses them, it wipes them away, it clears them away. It is the realm of cause, of pure being and pure cause. And it is the dimension that goes beyond reason into a dimension of realization, pure consciousness, pure being, the fourth dimensional mind that is in all persons. And I want to stress that. It is in all and through all. This is our normal state of beingness. We will never rest until we find it, until we experience it. And from it, or in it, the old will pass away, and behold, the new will appear. So, your kingdom come is that this state of beingness that is in me is what I seek. I open myself to it. It becomes my beloved choice. I no longer resist it. I put aside, I'm willing to commit myself to putting aside all things in me that are not like it, that are not of it. I seek it with all my heart. I'm willing to go to any lengths to have this experience and to live in and from this experience. So your kingdom come, this higher self. And in this prayer, we are saying that we will make the necessary effort through prayer, through meditation, through beginning to observe ourselves, putting off all things in us that are not like this higher self of us. It's an awareness that there's a true spiritual state of being that is ours to experience. And not only are we reaching for it in ourselves, but we begin to look for it and to relate to it in other persons. We begin to see beyond the world of effects in other people and to see that they are more beautiful and more perfect than we have known. We begin to communicate with that dimension of spirit in the world around us and in every person that we see. And we're asking that our outer life, which is the earth, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. On earth meaning in my visible world. That this invisible world of pure being becomes my visible world of expression. That it becomes the cause, the force, the reason behind my total experience. Too often we choose to use our free will in a negative way. We've allowed ourselves to think wrongly, to think selfishly, and this wrong thinking brings upon us all of our troubles. I was talking to someone today who was absolutely caught up in a mental and emotional state of misery that she had been in for quite some time. And when I suggested to her that she was loving her misery, there was a startled reaction. Let me give you an example. The next time you saw me, I was standing outside just off the parking lot in that low part of the church property where the snow has melted and the water has gathered about this deep and it's cold and muddy there. And you park your car and come upon me and I'm standing there in the mud. But I'm the only person standing in the mud. And you're somewhat astonished to see me standing in the mud. Would you not be? You know, just standing there, if you see me walking out of the mud, you might understand that. But I'm standing there, and I'm gradually sinking into the mud, and it's just about to my knees when you arrive. And the more deeply that I sink, the larger the tears that I cry. And you look and see that it really isn't mud, but it's my own tears that I'm standing in that have caused my problem. And you would invite me to step out of the mud, but I tell you that the reason I'm not doing it is because my life is not worth living. And so I'm going to stand here in this mud hole because my life is not worth living. Are you following me? And then you would suggest that perhaps I'm standing in the mud because I like standing in the mud. And you startle me when you say that, and you offend me when you say that, and I try to assure you that no one likes standing in mud, and you say, well, why are you standing in the mud? Then I say, because. Well, it's sort of like that. We live in a state of normalcy, which is not normalcy at all, and we enjoy the misery and the mud of it and the muck that it has caused to be upon us. And Jesus was saying, and other great minds have been telling us, that it isn't necessary at all, that the moment that we're willing to stand on the firm pavement, and more than that, to even reach higher, that it's possible for us to do so, and that if I will just step out of the mud, the most amazing things will begin to happen to me. All kinds of astonishing things. In just a few moments, I'll become comfortable again. I'll be restored again. Your will be done. What do you think God's will for you or for me is? I remember years ago when I first came into the spiritual life, I wondered if it was God's will for me to have a new automobile. And if so, whether it should be a Chevrolet or a Pontiac. Was a Pontiac asking for too much? Well, it is God's will for us to have everything that we need and all that we need and even more than what we need. It is God's will for us to be filled with joy, with excitement, with an inner state of ecstasy, to be fulfilled. Today, earlier, there was a young couple seated right there. The wife is about 6 months pregnant. They're very happy. This will be their first child. Can you imagine the joy that they will have when that child is born? They're able to provide it with all that it needs, more than it needs, with all the things that would comfort it and cause it to be healthy. Can you imagine the pleasure and the joy? Are we not children? It is God's will that you have all that you need. But it's more than just having what you need. It is God's will that you become this incredible creation that you have been designed to be, and that you and I surrender all the things that prevent us from becoming what we can be. So God's will for us is not just so much in having as it is in being or becoming. And it is God's will that we let go of our old ideas, of our old states of being, and old meaning those that we have brought with us even into this special place. It's God's will that we experience this higher consciousness now, right now. Why? Because we are children. We are the beloved creation of a benevolent creator. We are the children of omnipotence, omniscience, and of a being that is omnipresent. All of it is present everywhere. We're beloved. And the fact that we're loved, or that we're the beloved, does not come because of anything that we have done to deserve being loved, any more than the child that will be born to that young couple will do something to deserve its existence or the love that will come. We're loved because the nature of God is love. And love has only one desire, the prophet said, and that is to fulfill itself in us. It is God's will that we be fulfilled, that we be filled full of all that the Spirit is, and that the result of that fullness of life expresses itself in terms of being and having and accomplishing and doing, so that our lives become more and more alive. And when will this take place? Right now. Give us this day our daily bread. Our daily bread. Children spontaneously look to their human parents to supply all that they need or want. So it's important that we as children begin again to look to our perfect parent for that source of supply. Our daily bread. In my travels around this country, as a matter of fact, around the world, I've often wondered how many kinds of bread there are. There must be thousands of different kinds of bread. And I love it. I love bread. Well, Jesus used bread as a metaphor. Give us this day our daily bread. Of course, that meant the food that we will need to nourish our bodies. But bread means anything that you could possibly need. Food, clothing, shelter, means of travel, the very best means of travel, books to read, in modern times, cassettes to listen to. It means to be surrounded with like-minded persons. You and I are God's will for each other. Do you believe that? I'm sure of it. I know it. When I am not with you, I miss you because you nourish my spirit. You see, our daily bread means more than just the nourishment of food that would feed my body and of the things that would make my life meaningful, but it also means those things that nourish my mind and my spirit and that make me come alive. Those things that bring me out of the stagnation that comes from the inertia of life. Have you ever gone through a long, dark season in your world in which nothing much seemed to be happening to you? A time in when you were experiencing your powerlessness and in long moments your hopelessness? It's God's will that you not have that experience. And the moment that we become willing to be nourished, that we become willing to be inspired and changed. It's God's will that we be changed, that we be transformed, that we be made into new creatures with a new mentality, a new awareness. But you see, this cannot happen except that we become willing for it and ask for it. This incredible paradox of an infinite intelligence that is so sensitive that it will not impose itself upon us at all. God, who is all-powerful, waits patiently for us to say, enter and change me. Make me over into the person that I was destined to be. And so, give us this day our daily bread is my request. It is my statement that I am willing to take into my life all the things that I need. Now, people have a tendency to think of their supplies coming from certain particular places or circumstances. For example, from investments. Or perhaps as a result of the education that we acquire. Education is important. And we have caused ourselves to believe that when we grow up and we're educated and we become professionals, or perhaps we work on the assembly line or in a service station, doesn't make any difference where, that where I work is my source of supply. And that in reality, I am my own source of supply. It is through my strength, my own hand. We've caused ourselves to believe that, haven't we? Perhaps there's someone here who has also believed that I will grow up and fall in love with Mr. Wonderful or Mrs. or Miss Beautiful. And we'll live happily ever after, and we'll certainly take really good care of each other. And my good, my source, will be primarily my relationship with this wonderful person who is the source of my happiness and of my strength. Why, I have given my life to this person, and we have made a commitment, a partnership. We are professionals in this process of living. Have you ever had that experience? Won't work. It simply will not work. Now, it doesn't mean that relationships of meaningful nature are not important to us, because they are, or that it isn't propitious to work for a large and successful organization. But somewhere along the way, we have to begin to see that there is only one source, and that source is God, and that all other apparent sources are merely channels through which God works to supply us, but that the one source is the one mind, the one presence, and the one power. And the most remarkable thing that happens when we begin to get a feeling for this is that it doesn't make any difference what's happening in a moment or in a situation. A door can close, it can slam in your face, and you know that another door will open. A person can walk out of your life, and there will be a moment of the sense of tearing away, but there will not be the continued grief that one would have if they believed that the source of their good, of their love, of their affection is gone. We know that there's only one source, and that all things are working together for my individual and for our collective good. Do you really believe that? Then suffering cannot last very long, and nor can poverty ever exist if we believe it. Because if we believe that it is our Father's good pleasure to give us all things, then we begin to look around us and see that these persons and places and circumstances and conditions are merely channels through which that one source is working to give us our daily bread. It's very important also to become aware that if any one of us is living for himself or herself alone, we will not experience our own daily bread. Or if we're living just for our families, for those that we love. Remember the admonition of Jesus when he said, if you love the people that you love, you don't really love. If you're interested in the people that you love, meaning your own small group, either family or your ethnic group, or just your own religious group, you haven't really learned to love. It's when we become channels through whom that master mind, that master consciousness, moves into action to express itself in the world around us without any strings. That's when God really comes alive in us. There's a word that's very important, and that is realization. That's the gist of the whole matter, realization, which is experience. Realization is as distinct from mere theorizing and fine words as day is from night. To realize, which means to demonstrate. There have been many people who have been able to talk a very strong religious language, have studied theology, great depth, but who are not experiencing God. And give us this day our daily bread really means that today, right now, I am expecting not one miracle, but a series of miracles. A series of miracles. If you and I are in tune with the infinite, we will be at the right place at the right time to have the experiences that were designed for us. Would you agree? And this will be happening to us moment by moment by moment. The most exciting thing about the spiritual life is this continuing demonstration of God's divine presence in our individual lives in terms of events and circumstances that happen to us but do not come through us or from us. And the more I believe in them, the more I experience them. And the more I see them, the more I see and acknowledge these great moments in my life, the more often they occur. Give us this day our daily bread. One of the great things that I think about America is the way we dine, the way we share meals with each other. Don't you love to share a meal with the people that you love? How many times have you had lunch or breakfast or dinner with one or more people that are important to you and you could not remember anything that you tasted, not one morsel of food, and yet it was a glorious experience? How many times? It happens all the time to us, doesn't it? These relationships are food for our mind. Your spiritual experiences, your most recent demonstration, that event that happened to you today, this week, as a result of prayer, as a result of your need being fulfilled, when your life came alive again, when God was evident in your world again, feeds me and my faith, coming alive in the form of a miracle, becomes food for you, doesn't it? This is why it's so important for those of us who believe in the spiritual life to spend more and more time with each other. Do you notice how difficult it is to believe in these things if you spend most of your time with people who do not believe in them and who are not demonstrating them? But when you're with people who are experiencing miracles, it's easy to believe in miracles and to actually see them with your mind, to become aware of the presence of God as a living reality taking form and shape in response to our need. God coming alive, healing us, touching us, changing us so dramatically that we don't sound or look or talk or speak the way that we did before. This is what the spiritual life is all about. This is what transformation is all about. As I look around this great room, I'm seeing faces of people that I've known for a long time. And you're no more the person that I first saw than you are the person to whom your mother gave birth. You were a child at birth. And you grew, and you were still a child. And then there was a rebirth. There was a resurrection of something in you, and you began to grow again. And this incredible potential that is what you are came alive, and You were filled with excitement, and oftentimes you have not known what caused that excitement, but it was the self of you seeking expression. And the Lord's Prayer is telling us that this is why we're here on this planet. We should and we can help one another in overcoming our specific difficulties. Bear ye one another's burdens, or bear ye the burden of one another. But that you are the only person that can eat for you. Give us this day our daily bread. What a marvelous metaphor. I'm the only one that can eat for me. No one can save my physical life by taking nourishment for me, nor can anyone from you. Isn't that true? It also means that no one can save me, my spiritual life, except me. We can feed each other in the sense that we can sustain and support and inspire and motivate each other. The power that we have over each other is absolutely incredible to lift each other up. But it is I who must partake daily. See, another reason why that Jesus used bread as a metaphor is that we must eat daily. We must believe in these ideas daily. We must partake of this spiritual food regularly. We must practice these principles in all of our affairs. We can't just go from Sunday to Sunday, because you'll starve to death if we wait that long. It is moment to moment practicing, and which is the most difficult thing for us to do. To make the commitment that moment by moment we're going to eat of this heavenly bread, that we're going to practice this art of living in all situations that occur to us, and that we will transform our lives by being transformed ourselves. Give us this day the energy that we need, the strength, the wisdom, the support of other persons. And in the most amazing way, when we make this commitment, it happens to us. And this is what the Lord's Prayer is saying, that the Creator of all is with us all the time, and when we are willing to go all the way, halfway measures avail us nothing, but when we're willing to go all the way, that God is with us all the time. But it is a daily thing. There can be no major gaps. It's a practice. It must continue. Daily bread. Give us this day our daily bread. Help me to live in now moments. Help me to be alive in all of the circumstances that exist for me, so that I will be awake and be fully formed, fully seen. One of the oldest of all statements, coming from the Sanskrit, a language that has not been understood for more than 3,000 years, is this statement. You've heard it as the salutation to the dawn. Hear it now as a statement of our inner reality. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is already a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today well lived makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Give us the fullness of life today, the joy of it, the peace of it, the beauty of it, the love of it. Give us the ability to go into action in a glorious way, to do the things that need to be done by us, so that we'll be transformed into the super incredible beings that we were designed to be. And in that action and wisdom, we're transformed to new creations. That's the way it is.